This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Coming up on today's show, a look at the new Liberty Center. First up, the United States is the world's leading consumer of coffee, with Americans drinking 400 million cups of coffee each day. Most coffee lovers have their favorite blend or brand and preferred brewing method, and about a third of them like it black. But what goes into making a good cup of coffee, and why do we make drinking it an integral part of our daily lives? Joining us this afternoon is Miami University Emeritus Professor of History and owner of the Oxford Coffee Company, Dr. Robert Thurston. He also edited the book, Coffee, A Comprehensive Guide to the Bean, the Beverage, and the Industry. How do you like your coffee brew? Join our conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Bob, really good to see you today.
Thanks a lot. Glad to be back, Mark.
You know, that amazes me that we consume 400 million cups of coffee every day, if you do the math, it's something like 146 billion cups of coffee every year. Is that right?
It sounds right to me. We drink, on average, about 400 cups, 8-ounce cups of coffee per capita per year. But, you know, we're not the world's leader by any means. There's a kind of competition point of pride among Scandinavian countries and the Netherlands. And where we might drink 400 cups of coffee per capita per year, they're up more like 1,200 cups of coffee in Finland or Norway, depending on who you talk to. So they like to take breaks between drinking coffee, you know, the opposite of what we do.
Why do you think coffee is so popular? What makes this drink such a popular thing?
I think that it's long been the drink of conversation, and it's been called the think drink. It doesn't necessarily jazz people up. Some people it does, but I think it has a sort of a more solid sense or feel and taste in your mouth than tea does. You know, there's no reason why you can't sit around and drink a whole lot of tea, but now we drink much more coffee than tea. So I think it's long been associated, even way before Starbucks, with pleasant places to go and sit, conversation, a drink that warms you and makes you more alert, feel more energetic.
Yeah, do you know how the custom of offering a cup of coffee to someone or saying, let's sit down over a cup of coffee, you know how that got started?
Well, we have records of the first coffee houses in, well, of all places, Syria, Aleppo and so on, about 1550.
That far back.
I mean, the origins of coffee are pretty much mystical and legendary. But we think that people were drinking it in the Middle East as a liquid at the very latest by 1500. And then again, coffee houses in places like Aleppo, Damascus, and pretty soon Istanbul. So, and from there it spread out. European travelers tasted this new drink and they thought, this is spectacular. And by the way, it's going to keep us sober while we talk and do business instead of drinking beer and ale and then making a business deal. So, it's been around. The idea of the coffee house has been around a long time, and especially in from the mid 1600s on in England, the coffee house developed as a place to meet people, to talk, to have conversations about the latest news. Early newspapers came out of coffee houses. Early sort of etiquette books, how to behave, how to act for the rising middle class, that came out of early coffee houses in Oxford and London. And so this tradition goes back a long way. We lost it, I think, for quite a while in this country. But then, and I don't want to talk too much about Starbucks, but they've done a great service in terms of making the coffee house a warm and welcoming place to sit.
Where was the first coffee house in the U.S.?
There's a bit of debate about that. Again, a competition between Boston and New York, no surprise. But we think maybe about 1666, there was one in New York called the Green Dragon, and right around there, one in Boston as well. Although the Dutch brought it first, you know, to New York, New Amsterdam.
Now, when did the idea of the combination coffee house bookshop, when did that start?
Well, gosh, I remember Borders started in Ann Arbor, Michigan, actually, when I was a grad student there several decades ago. And Borders began to serve coffee in the bookstore. And I think the two went together really nicely for a long time in the sense that, oh, you can get a book, browse a book, get a magazine, get a newspaper. But even way, way before that, again, going back to the coffee houses in England in the middle of the 1600s, the idea was you could come and read a newspaper, read a book, or even write a book. Some of the first English novels were actually written in coffee houses as people sat for a long time.
So coffee stimulates creativity somehow.
I think so. And you can point to the early insurance business. Lloyd's of London came out of a coffee house. The concept of tipping, which stands for to ensure promptness in the coffee houses. So we get a lot of traditions out of them.
Yeah, no, I keep hearing these stories about the health benefits of coffee. For example, yesterday there was a story about Harvard School of Public Health doing a study, and they found that people who drink 3 to 5 cups of coffee a day have about a 15% lower mortality risk compared to non-coffee drinkers, and that even applies if you're if you're drinking decaf.
Yes.
What is your take on the health benefits of coffee?
Well,
there's a lot of debate over it, I know, but
really the debate is pretty much simmering down in favor of health benefits for coffee. So this is just the latest study that I've seen. I did read through the material about the Harvard study yesterday, and there are other studies of, especially of American nurses, and that's the study the Harvard one was based on, but a study, for example, of French women that showed that as they aged from 70 years on, they kept a higher level of cognition if they drank a fair amount of coffee. So you have to be careful, obviously. Each person's chemistry, body chemistry is different, but if you don't have really high blood pressure to begin with, and you don't, for whatever reason, react badly to coffee, then 3 to 4 cups, maybe 5, seems to give a lot of health benefits. Helps ward off Alzheimer's, type 2 diabetes, Parkinson's, several types of cancer. It's even now being touted, I just read this today, caffeine for use in skin cream. Now, I don't know.
Okay. People would have to stimulate your skin.
Well, it keeps your skin younger, softer. I don't, but people should check into that and talk to their doctors clearly about that type of thing.
Can we thank coffee for making caffeine one of the most consumed drugs in the world?
Absolutely. Now, caffeine is in other things too, in certain soft drinks and in all those energy drinks and in tea, but it really is coffee that has made caffeine the number one psychoactive drug consumed around the world, no question.
Are young people embracing coffee the way you see much of that?
More. In our store, we see a real mix of people, but we see a lot of Miami students and people from the town who are sophisticated about coffee, and they want their coffee made very carefully on the spot. And they like to talk to us about coffee, what really goes into it, what we do. So there's always a kind of a problem. Can we bring more young people into coffee drinking? There's a lot of concern in the coffee industry about that. But there are lots of good signs. For one thing, that soft drinks are not very healthy for you. So give up all that soda that you're drinking and switch to something. And by the way, my hope, just I'm prejudiced, I like straight black coffee. But of course, it would be nice if people drank, in my opinion, more of that. And the health benefits come more from black coffee than they do from loading it up with milk and sugar. But It's just to your taste, of course.
Yeah, yeah. I started drinking it when I was 12.
Mm,
mm-hmm. I actually I discovered it at a hotel. That was when they were starting to come up with the free coffee brewers.
Okay. Yeah.
And I discovered it in a hotel, and it was it didn't cost me like the can of Coke did.
Right.
So I started drinking coffee, and my first reaction was, boy, that's strange tasting, but I kind of like it.
Yeah.
And it stuck with me ever since.
Right. Well, many people. that I know started by putting a lot of milk and sugar in coffee. I certainly started that way. And then I said, well, wait a minute. Maybe I should cut down on that stuff. And then at roughly the same time, way back in the 70s, I discovered, hey, if you get good enough beans, you don't get that bitter taste. You get some natural sweetness right in the coffee itself.
And my producer wants me to point out that I'm not advocating that children drink coffee.
No.
They start at a young age.
Okay, but let me give you one.
I liked it, though.
Sure. Well, 12 is not too early. Let me tell you one story from my travels in Brazil a few years ago. People told us there that they very deliberately give young kids, even 6 or 7 years old, coffee before they have math classes, and they do better in math classes, even at that age, with a cup of coffee before they go in.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation with Bob Thurston about coffee. And Bob, how many countries grow coffee?
Oh, gee, there may be some 50 countries that grow it around the world, Mark. Some grow very little. Brazil is the largest producer. Vietnam is second. Ethiopia has crept into third place, then Colombia, like that. But there are Rwanda, Burundi. In the United States, we grow it in three places now, in Puerto Rico, a number of Hawaiian islands. And there's even one farm in California now in a particular microclimate that doesn't get too hot or too cold where they grow coffee.
Yeah, we drink a lot of coffee in this country, but are we one of the leading producers of coffee? Or?
No, not really, because of the stricter labor laws, the high cost of labor, environmental protections, and so on. So the most coffee that we grow is from Hawaii, but if it's Kona or Kau coffee, which is a district south of Kona on the Big Island, it comes to us on the mainland as very expensive usually. It can be great, but it's expensive.
Okay. How important is coffee to the world economy?
Well, for some countries, it's terribly, terribly important. Again, Rwanda, Burundi, they're making well over 50% of their foreign exchange income from coffee. It has declined in significance to some extent in Latin America, in that it's not, used to be like El Salvador, it would be the 80% of their foreign income and so on. So relatively it's declined, but still if you can think of well over 50 million families depending on coffee and a business that's at least worth $100 billion as coffee makes its way around the world, it's a really important agricultural product.
Coming up, we'll have more Java Talk, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. How do you take your coffee? This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining us today is Miami University Emeritus Professor of History and owner of the Oxford Coffee Company, Dr. Robert Thurston. He's also one of the editors of the book Coffee, A Comprehensive Guide to the Bean, the Beverage, and the Industry. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Bob, I frequently call it Java. Where does that nickname come from?
Java is an island in the Indonesian archipelago, and the Dutch were the first people to plant coffee in that part of the world. And so since it came out of Java, that name kind of stuck to all coffee because the Dutch were so good at exporting it for a long time. As I said, they brought it to the colonies in North America. And the other term, by the way, that gets attached to coffee a fair amount is mocha, which refers to a port in Yemen. So sometimes companies stretching things a bit or a lot in the late 19th century would call their coffee Mocha Java, just to make sure they got
everything.
Both names in there, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. The price of coffee, it's pretty much high all over the place. And do you think many of the high-priced beans are worth it? And Do you know what the most expensive coffee is out there?
Well, the most expensive coffee is not the best coffee at all. The most expensive coffee is Kopi Luwak or Luwak, which comes from Indonesia. This is coffee that at least used to be eaten by small cats, civet cats, and then the cats, shall we say, processed the coffee internally, excreted the processed beans with their dung, and then Indonesians would go and poke through the droppings to find these beans. Well, that coffee will sell for as much as $300 a pound roasted, and I've been chasing it for a while, Mark, just to taste it.
Out
of curiosity, but by all accounts, it's just not very good. But the best coffee that I've ever had comes out of a farm run by an American in Panama. It's a particular variety called Geisha, and this guy's a great farmer, and I've seen that for sale recently for $160 a pound roasted.
Hmm. How many different varieties of coffee are there?
Oh, my. Well,
do we even know?
No, we don't. We don't. There are two basic species, Coffea arabica, which is the good stuff, and Coffea robusta. And as the name suggests, it's tougher, roughly twice the caffeine content on average than arabica has. And that goes into instant coffee and some other coffees that we won't name. But among Arabica, there are endless hybrids being developed, and there's also work on genetically modified coffee, but that's still down the road, I think. I should point out that most all the good coffee, Arabica, the smoother coffee, still comes from coffee that survived a blight that went around the world in the 1860s and 70s, and for some reason spared the island that was then called Bourbon, or Bourbon. So we don't have a wide genetic base among the coffee that's out there now, and it's a real concern. If the wrong kinds of disease and pests hit the coffee that's out there, it could virtually disappear.
513-419-7100 to join us. And Asa in Blue Ash wants to ask, we were just talking about the Robusta bean. She wants to ask about that. Asa?
Okay.
Good afternoon.
Yes. Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I recently read an article that indicated that the Robusta bean may have more health benefits than the other variety. Mm. And I've been looking for it, and I found it near impossible to actually locate it. And I'm wondering if that's because it just doesn't taste as good. And I'm wondering if you could speak to the health benefits of the Robusta versus the Arabica.
Arabica.
I don't know how to pronounce it.
It's okay. Yeah. It's okay. No, nobody does. No problem. I haven't seen that article, frankly, so I'm a little puzzled by that. As I said, the Robusta beans, on average, but this is a great generalization, have about twice as much caffeine as Arabica beans do. So if the health benefits come from caffeine, then you could think, okay, Robusta is just going to pack more of a punch and deliver more of those benefits. However, the study that Mark and I were talking about that was just released yesterday out of the Harvard School of Public Health indicated that there's no significant difference between the health benefits derived from regular coffee and from decaf coffee. So, scientists are very busily studying the compounds that exist in coffee. They know something about the antioxidants in coffee, but there are all kinds of other, there may be as many as 1,200 significant chemical compounds in a cup of coffee. And that's a cup that's 98% water, by the way. So how Robusta would deliver more health benefits if it's not from the caffeine, I honestly couldn't say. As far as trying to find Robusta, you can find it in coffee that's in your grocery store. I mean, if you want Robusta, just go and pick out a big plastic tub of coffee. But if you're looking for Robusta beans, that's more difficult. if you write to me, care of our website, www.oxfordcoffee.com, I will try to find out some places that will sell you Robusta beans. I know they are available. I don't deal with Robusta myself, so I would find out for you.
Let's talk with Andrew in North Avondale. Hi, Andrew.
Yes, I used to like the old style Sumatra coffee.
Mm-hmm.
You used to be able to get up to, I don't know, I got it at least as late as 1999, and I think the turning point was when they had that tsunami.
Yeah.
About a year or so after that, it used to be that Sumatran coffee had this really full body.
Yes, yes.
And now it tastes a lot more like Central American coffee.
Ah, lighter body, yes. Well, I tell you, come on up to the store. We'll serve you some Sumatran with a lot of body to it. I don't know that all the farms have recovered. Now, of course, there were terrible floods in Aceh in Sumatra because of the tsunami, and that wrecked a lot of the shipping facilities and so on. And there were very, very heavy rains up in the mountains where Sumatran coffee is actually grown. But I've had some good stuff lately with a lot of serious body. So it's out there. It's out. Maybe it's just a question of you're looking around more for it, but we carry it with I think very, very serious body. I like it.
Bob, I believe there's Gerardo who's listening from the Miami campus in Luxembourg.
Oh, Gerardo.
Is that right? Gerardo says he drinks his coffee black.
Yes. Yes, Gerardo. How are you, Gerardo?
Thanks for the comment, Gerardo. Yeah. Let's talk with Herb in Walnut Hills. Hi, Herb.
Hi. When I went through medical school, we were taught that caffeine did improve your performance, like mathematics and brain function, but also if you took too much, instead of getting a gain, you got more errors. And I can remember writing an exam where my pen just flew the whole way across the paper and virtually crossed out what I'd been writing. In other words, you can take too much.
Oh, yes. Well, I'm sure that you know as a doctor that if you take too much of many, many compounds, many things, that's bad for you. The Greek word pharma means both medicine and poison. So if you take enough aspirin, you can blow your stomach out, et cetera. And too much caffeine, oh, absolutely. The recommendation that I've just seen is no more than about 400 milligrams of caffeine per day. It's very hard to say how much caffeine is in any one cup of coffee unless you're prepared to test it with a gas chromatograph, which is a very large, heavy, bulky machine that's not exactly portable. So we don't know, but if we say that, okay, on average, as a gross generalization, there are about 100 milligrams of caffeine in a regular brewed cup, 8-ounce cup of coffee, then 4 cups is about what you should consider a maximum. But your body chemistry is different from mine, different from Mark's, et cetera. So you have to be careful with it.
Yeah.
But and some people get very jittery and upset and can't sleep if they have one cup of coffee, regular coffee, after 10 in the morning. I can drink 2 or 3 a day, and I'm fine.
You know, even decaf has some amount of caffeine.
Yeah, absolutely, because the law on decaf in this country is that 97% of the caffeine content has to be removed, which doesn't say anything about how much caffeine is in that coffee to begin with or how much is left. It's just a percentage. So I've seen tests that show a very wide variation in the amount of caffeine in decaf coffee. So
let's talk to Alonzo in Dayton. Hi, Alonzo.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. Go right ahead.
Good. First, I probably started drinking coffee when I was 5 or 6 years old at my grandmother's
house. You got
house,
me beat.
Percolated coffee.
Okay.
Tipping on her coffee.
Yeah.
I now only drink black coffee. But I find that a lot of the more locally roasted coffee has a better flavor than coffee beans that I buy commercially that's roasted in other locations, which often seems over-roasted. But I also wanted to ask, the big question was, there's been many coffees touted as free trade coffees with better agreements with farmers. Have those really made any big difference for the farmers and the people who work those farms economically?
It's actually fair trade coffee. And yes, the fair trade agreements have made a serious difference for some people. What fair trade does is to stipulate a floor below which the price that will be paid for the coffee will not go. And so right now, most coffee on the New York commodity market is selling for, I look today, about $1.18, which is not per pound, which is not very much money, whereas fair trade is saying, the last figures I think are $1.26 a pound. So especially when the general market is low, fair trade does protect farmers, and it also pays a social premium. So I've been on a couple of farms in Nicaragua, for example, where the village was organized in a co-op and had a fair trade agreement, and they had a school. They had clean drinking water, and they find when they get the stability of a fair trade agreement that it helps them get loans at a cheaper interest rate, and it makes them more sustainable as a farming unit or co-op, and that brings in donors from Canada, from the European Union, and so forth. But I will say that after a certain point, fair trade can also be a really limiting factor for farmers. In other words, they don't have as much incentive to really take great care of growing their coffee, pruning the trees, fertilizing, all of that, or to plant new varieties of coffee that would earn them even more money. So fair trade is great, in my opinion, as a way to stabilize and keep your community going. But then I would hope that farmers would go for at least devote some of their land to the more expensive varieties of coffee. And instead of getting $1.26 or something, they would start getting $2, $3, whatever a pound for the coffee they grow.
We got an email from Gary. He wanted to know, is organic coffee better for you than regular coffee?
No. Organic coffee really benefits the farmers. It refers to the kinds of fertilizers, insecticides, and pesticides that are put onto the coffee plants or around them. Those have to be organic. In other words, no Roundup, for example, no malathion, nothing like that, strictly organic compounds. The great benefit of organic, therefore, is in the health of the farmers. It doesn't taste any different, judging by all the tests I've seen and the coffee we have in the store. And also, coffee goes through so many stages of processing. You know, we're actually grinding up and putting hot water onto the seeds of a fruit. We call them beans, but there are several layers that have to be removed: the skin, the pulp, what's called parchment, then silver skin. And so even if a farmer puts on heavy-duty commercial synthetic fertilizers, those don't penetrate all the way into the beans themselves. I've seen tests on coffee beans that are organic as opposed to non-organic, and the non-organic coffee just doesn't show any residues of insecticides or pesticides.
So, Bob, we had a call from Andrew. He was wanting to know what the best way is to brew coffee at home.
Well, my vote would be for the simplest possible methods. Now, I like black coffee, okay? So I think what's called a dripper cone, paper filter in the cone, a grinder if you can possibly get it, especially a burr grinder, B-U-R-R. Keep the beans fresh. Don't put them in the refrigerator or freezer. Put them in a tightly closed bag or container in a dark shelf. Grind the beans just before you want to use the coffee. There are all kinds of videos that will tell you how to make what's called pour-over coffee. So very simple stuff that doesn't cost you much. You can get a great cup of coffee for 25 to 40 cents using these methods. The equipment is really inexpensive. If you're talking about espresso, then in my view, go for a very serious, heavy machine. And I think you're really talking about $600 and up for one that will be durable. I don't sell them, so I have no interest in saying that. Financial interest. But I would go with the simple stuff and then doctor it any way you want to.
Bob, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you, Mark. Glad to be here.
Miami University Emeritus Professor of History and owner of the Oxford Coffee Company, Dr. Robert Thurston. He's also one of the editors of the book, Coffee, A Comprehensive Guide to the Bean, the Beverage, and the Industry. Coming up, we'll explore the new Liberty Center. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.